Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
We still dance during our intro music. I love it.
5 years later.
Yeah. We're coming on to our 5-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
Wow. Are you sick of me yet?
No.
Oh, that's
nice. In fact, not at all.
Excellent.
I love you more every day.
Oh, me too. I mean, not love me every more every day. We are joined today. I'm so professional. We are joined today by Kim McMillan, who is the director of the upcoming production at Shoeswap Theatre, Trying. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you. And thank you for welcoming him into this love-in.
Yeah, well, I know, because we just kind of like being here. It's hard to fit it into our schedules of 18,000 other responsibilities in the community, but we love it.
And it brings us joy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It sparks joy.
Yes, which is what theater does, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes.
That's why I'm in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And in fact, Shoeswap Theater is an entirely volunteer-driven organization, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing how many people we have working on everything.
Mm-hmm. Lots of passion in there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's start by, I know you're up to your eyeballs in this production because it's about to have its opening night in about a week and a half. So tell us about Trying.
Trying. Well, the playwright, Joanna McClellan Glass, is a Saskatoon girl who actually has lived in the States for some time now. But when she was 25 years old in 1967, which was the year I graduated from high school, she happened to be with her young husband in Washington, D.C., and she took a halftime job with the elderly Judge Biddle. So this play is based on her real-life experiences, although it has been fictionalized somewhat for dramatic purposes. But I think it's a pretty accurate picture of what she experienced with Judge Biddle. Hmm. He was 81 years old. He was in very poor health. He was in pain pretty much all the time. And in his own words, he functioned somewhere between lucidity and senility. So he would have lapses. But he also, at this time of his life, became quite cantankerous and difficult. Quite trying, you might say. Mm. And so basically, young Sarah Shore, who is the playwright in the character, in the play rather, is she's got spine. In fact, she was hired by Judge Biddle's wife because she had spine, and she knew that would be required.
Yeah.
Because he'd been through a lot of secretaries. So here's a man, a brilliant legal mind. He was the Attorney General for the United States during the war years, appointed by Roosevelt.
Wow.
And before that, the Solicitor General. And then after the war, he was appointed as the Chief American Justice to the Nuremberg trials.
Holy.
And so he had this quite amazing experience. Mm-hmm. He was also a Republican, raised Republican, who was converted to the Democratic Party.
I think that the word converted has to converted. Be used for that.
Well, I think it's appropriate.
Yes, there's some religious verbosity.
You know, as the Republicans called him a traitor to his class, and the Democrats called him the noblest Roman of them all.
Oh, wow.
And so he was a genuinely progressive politician, lawyer, judge. But he did not treat his secretaries well.
Hmm.
So he and Sarah find each other very trying in this relationship. And so the whole play is really about the unfolding of that relationship and how it transforms over time. So it's a drama. There's lots of humor in it. Not so much ha-ha humor, but lots of kind of language humor. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a very touching, charming story.
Hmm. And you're the director. You're directing.
I'm the director, yes. Mm. I saw this play, about 4 or 5 years ago at the Provincial Drama Festival in Kamloops. It won the festival. It was a production from Maple Ridge. They won the festival, and I loved the play. And ever since then, I've wanted to direct this play, and this seemed to be the year.
Mm. And there's only two characters, correct?
Yes. Well, you see, The last play I directed was Mary Poppins.
Oh, dear. Cast of thousands.
With a cast of thousands and dancers and singers, and it was the most bizarre, out-of-control experience I ever had in the theater. I couldn't believe that it all came together the way it did. So I thought, a two-hander sounds kind of nice.
So is that more challenging in a way? Well, not more challenging, but it has its own challenge because you only have these two people with which to portray this incredibly deep message.
Well, in a way it is. It's more challenging for the two. Mm-hmm. It's a way easier for scheduling rehearsals.
Yeah,
okay. I would imagine.
There's a lot of pressure on the two. And Peter Blacklock, who plays Judge Biddle, I'm not sure exactly how old Peter is, but he's maybe probably around my age.
We'll just leave that number out of there.
I'll be 70 next month. He asked if he was going to be in this. He asked that we start rehearsals before Christmas because, with his aging brain, he wanted to be sure that he would have lots of time to learn the lines. Well, he's learned them beautifully.
Mm,
and young Ali Balloon, who shoe swap audiences will know as yes. Juliet in Romeo and Juliet,
yeah.
And as young Patsy in what's the name of that show that we did last spring?
It's funny. This happens to me at the gallery too. I can't remember a show that happened 6 months ago because you're always thinking about the next thing.
Yes.
So
perfect
these things,
pie. There it
perfect
is.
Pie,
perfect
yeah.
pie.
Which
yes.
was fantastic. Saw that too.
So anyway, I've got two wonderful actors, which have made it much, much easier. Mm-hmm. And they're so willing and so willing to try things.
And, yeah. And know. So, how did you cast them? Did you have them in mind when you were imagining directing this play, or did you have to have open auditions?
Well, I had open auditions, and genuinely open auditions. Usually I have a few people in mind for a role because you don't want to actually choose a play if you don't think you can cast it.
Yes.
So I actually checked with some people to see if they were willing to audition before I actually chose the play. And certainly both Ali and Peter were among those. But I had amazing auditions. I could have cast the play probably three different times.
Mm, is that
with
right?
Three different casts. So I was very lucky that way.
Wow. I guess, yeah, I think about, like, when anywhere in the arts sector, I think, you do kind of imagine what different individuals will bring to an idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will bring to a theme. And so it's probably really hard to just see, nope, we're just going to open this wide open and see what happens, because it does define your final product.
It does indeed, yes. And when you're auditioning too, it's the tricky part is that you can have somebody audition who's the perfect type for the part, but doesn't necessarily have the acting range to take that to the next level.
Mm.
And sometimes you'll cast somebody who maybe isn't the perfect type, but you know they've got the range and that they will find a way to create that character and bring it to life on stage. So it's tricky figuring that out at auditions.
Mm-hmm.
But I truly think I could have cast it three times and had three successful versions of the play. And they all would have been a little different.
Yeah.
You know?
Then you could have had one of those ever-rotating presentations, right? Where
yeah.
it's just the different cast, just like when
yeah.
they're kids in school.
Yeah.
Cast A, cast B,
yes.
cast C.
Yes.
And ran it all night long every day for 3 weeks.
Well, we sort of did that with the Christmas play with Santa's Zombie Apocalypse.
Yeah.
You had two separate, that's right, two entirely separate casts.
Yeah, two different drama
thinking,
classes
yeah,
from the high school.
This sounds familiar. When did we talk about two separate casts?
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And Gloria Cox was here.
Yeah.
And I think that worked very well, yeah.
Well, and it sure gives lots of people the experience.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun, right, is making sure that everybody gets a chance to do something that they think they might be good at and,
mm-hmm.
you know, an opportunity to do it in real life, like not just, you know, for the cast of your family in your living room.
Yeah.
So what a wonderful opportunity mm-hmm. that you're providing.
And how long would the script for something like this be? 100 pages?
Close. 98.
Wow.
Wow. Good guess, Louise.
Yeah.
No, that's right. That was just a guess. So they are having to memorize 100 pages of dialogue?
Yes.
Wow.
And only two people. I know. Like, that's
and you know, the, incredible.
I can't even remember my phone number most days. Come on. Really? 100 pages.
And the hard lines to remember are the ones, like, there are certain parts of the play where Allie, where Sarah, is mostly saying, yes, sir. or you know, variations on that, and trying to remember which one goes where. And is an interesting challenge.
Yeah. Well, especially because you kind of use the dialogue, like the real dialogue, to help you remember where you are in the dialogue. But if you're only saying yes sir, yes sir, where do you remember how to track that?
One of the directors that I've worked or been to workshops with before at festivals saying, we're recommending, like, usually actors will highlight their own lines in the script. And he says, don't do that. Highlight the word or the phrase in the speech before your line that you are reacting to or responding to. So what that does then is it really makes you listen, and it makes you respond much more naturally. And it's far easier to remember your line if you're truly listening to what the actor has just said before you.
Right. Yeah.
Then you won't be parroting it.
Yes.
You know, from memory. So that's an interesting take.
Wow. They must know both sets of lines. Yes. Because you can't just know yours. You have to,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how, you know, like the familiarity and the comfort reads by the audience too, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're just waiting for your trigger with your eyes wide open, and then when it happens, you say your line. We see that. And it's not natural. So, yeah,
I think every
actor must have to kind of learn the whole thing, learn the whole story.
Yeah. And that's half the joy for me of directing, is just watching what's happening on stage, listening to what people are saying. And it's just a feeling. You just know when what's being said isn't ringing quite true, isn't quite authentic. And so then you pause, and with the actors, you look at that line and figure, okay, what is that? What are you trying to do with that line? What effect do you want to have with that line on the other person? What are you trying to make happen or prevent from happening with that line? And so you work on that kind of level, and it forces you to pay really close attention to real life. Mm. Because every time in ordinary conversation, that we have an interchange, each of us is trying to achieve something. Whatever it is that I'm saying right now has a social purpose of some kind. And so but mostly we never think about that, right? So in looking and examining the script, I found myself just thinking about ordinary conversation. Well, what, you know, when I'm telling a friend a story about something that's happened, why am I doing that? What do I want? You know?
Yeah.
It really forces you to be aware of life. And I guess my hope is that good drama, maybe in a less intense way, also helps the audience to understand real life, to understand themselves a little bit better. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, so for me,
and
that's the joy of drama.
Yeah, and we're in an era where storytelling is changing.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you're doing us a service in that way too, right?
Like, I hope so.
Staying true to some deep, meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
Helping us understand that, it still exists in us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And authentic dialogue and...
Yeah.
And the purpose of it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, not just to hear our own voice, mm-hmm. you know, because sometimes that's... Like we talk about the echo chamber all the time and how dangerous it is.
Yeah.
Wow, how meaningful. Okay, it's already time for us to take a break. It's been really interesting already.
Sure has.
Yeah, you're listening to Artscape Today.
Sounds surprised.
No, it's not surprising.
We're not used to guests.
Yeah. We usually just stare at each other and like make each other laugh. That's really all we do. Okay, so you've got this amazing, vast cast that you're working with. And now, what about, there's other bodies in the room.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's very unusual, this is my fifth time directing, and I found myself looking around and not having a lot to do and thinking, there must be something I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been this relaxed directing a play before. And then I thought back, okay, well, Mary Poppins was absolutely crazy. I never felt in control of anything at any time. And so this is... But it's not just because it's only two actors. It's also because I also have an amazing crew of designers, builders, props people, you know, all of that stuff. They all just know what they're doing and they go out and do it. And I just have to every now and again approve something or say, yes, this will do. I think maybe not that one. And it's just I can't believe my good fortune.
It's a sign of a mature organization as well, that everybody, the culture is such that everybody knows what they need to do and when they need to do it.
Good job. It is. That's true. We've got some new people involved. But the overall designer is Aiden Sparks, whom people will remember as Bert in Mary Poppins. But his first love is design. And so he's designed the set. Now, there is a trend, has been over the last number of years, towards simplicity in sets, minimalist sets. And that's actually a good thing. There's a lot you can do, and audiences are very willing to use their imaginations to fill in the gaps. But every now and again, the old-fashioned part of me just loves it when you walk into the back of the theater and you see the set with the preset lighting on it, and you think, wow, you're walking into a different world. And that's what this set is like.
Lovely.
I'm not going to give away all the details of it, but basically Judge Biddle's home office was in the upstairs, which would have been the hayloft in the stable back in the 1800s or early 1900s, is now probably the garage. It doesn't actually say that. But basically, so there are stairs upstairs into the loft, which has been converted into a home office and put together with bits and pieces of furniture and desks and so on, so that there's room for him and for a secretary. And so that world has just been recreated by the set design, or the overall design, the set design, a new person, Ivana Werdinsky, who is an architectural designer, moved here from Calgary.
Oh, wow. Cool.
She's got a wonderful eye. And so she's been kind of heading up the set decor. And then the Morgan sisters, Karen and Anne, working on getting all the different props that are needed. We've got good people, Anne Scalehorn on lighting, who directed Perfect Pie last year, and Ethan, whose last name I find difficult to remember, who did sound for Wednesday on the Wharf.
Oh, Ethan Van Eiderstein.
Thank you. Yes.
Oh yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah.
What a pile of incredible skills in a young person.
Exactly.
Like, we're so lucky to have people like that kicking around town.
And he's so excited to learn our sound software system, and he's quick. My goodness, he's quick to pick it up. And he shares my attention to detail. Like it you know, he comes up with a sound effect and I might say, I think that might be okay. And he might say, okay isn't good enough.
Nice.
Pursuit of
excellence. So he'll keep looking.
Yeah.
And I think he's that kind of a person. So
yeah.
Anyway, so all of those things are just falling into place. I can just trust everybody to do what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the result is going to be quite striking.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because one of the nice things about having a guest from the theater on our show is that we get all these little behind the scenes tidbits and anecdotes and, you know, sometimes things that are going terribly wrong, which end up going right. Mm-hmm. And it's fine. And it's funny. But it sounds like you're so organized and in control that there's not much to share in terms of weird backstage anecdotes.
No disaster stories?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, no, we haven't had any disasters
all right.
yet.
Well, knock on wood that we don't.
Yes, yeah. I suppose. Yeah.
Oh, I have to mention two other people. Craig Massey is on set construction, and he's amazing. And, of course, my wife, Susan, is my producer, has produced all five of my shows, and super organized. So I know that all that stuff will be taken care of, and she'll tell me if I need to be doing something that I'm not doing.
Wonderful. Can you clarify? I've never understood the role of producer.
Producer, basically...
I don't think I understand the role.
The producer, yeah, people get producer and director mixed
up.
Yes, yes. So the director is the artistic person who actually controls what happens on stage. The producer is more the organizer of the, well, the organizational end of things.
I see.
Like scheduling, structuring, making sure all the department heads are filled, all the... No, have people to do the jobs, making sure that they're on time and on schedule. We have production meetings regularly to check in with everybody about what's happening.
So it's a different word for production manager.
Yeah, yes. In many ways, sometimes we've thought about changing. I think producer is maybe the older word, and modern theater companies often use the term production manager.
I always thought producer, I mean, I think of the Broadway show producers where it was all about the big money.
Yeah.
Right? Underwriting. And hoping for a loss, you could. Isn't that a Broadway show? The producers,
yeah, I think so. Yeah,
where they produce a show to.
The first show that Susan produced was "Come Blow Your Horn" in 1978, which I had a leading role in. I just come to town, and that's how we met.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Lovely.
That's a good backstory.
It's a Valentine story.
Well, yeah. It is. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And she was told at that time that the producer's job basically was to make sure the show went on and it made money.
There we go. Mm.
Yes. Well, and that's kind of what I always thought that producers really did, was find the sponsors, find the money to make it all happen. And I in the movie world, executive producer basically is the somebody who actually puts up money and they don't have to do anything else. They just put the money behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but
production manager is really a better term.
Okay.
In a theater company like this, there would be a lot of details to deal with, right? Like, it wouldn't be just, here's a check, sign a check.
Yeah, it's the amazing Joyce Henderson.
Yes, I'll be in my Rolls Royce smoking a cigar.
It's the amazing Joyce Henderson that usually goes out and gets the money, finds sponsors and so on.
Oh, she's the executive producer.
She is very good, and we're grateful.
Yeah, we've got a pretty great team of cultural workers in this town that give and are both workers, like actual workers plus volunteers, that just give so much time and energy to all of these different passions. And we're very lucky. Joyce is one of those people.
Yes, and those interests in turn work their way into the social fabric of the community. Mm-hmm. You have architectural designers working on your show. You have carpenters working on your show, decorators, be sort of interesting to explore. I know you mentioned there's a designer and a decor person.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, especially on this show, when we talk about art and design, people don't necessarily understand the difference between designing and decorating. Mm. Because it's not at all the same thing.
No. Maybe you could explain the difference.
Well, I wondered if Kim had thoughts on... I mean,
is
I have
different
thoughts
in theater
that,
than it is in like the rest, you know, like in the say
like design
world,
isn't picking a lamp,
right,
or finding the perfect wallpaper, right? That's informed by an overall design, or is it?
Well, it's not design in the strict sense of the word, and yet I think you have to have an eye for design in order to pick the right lamp.
Oh, absolutely,
pick the right sofa. Yes. So it really is all of a piece.
But you can't decorate until you have a design.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So normally we have a set designer.
Yes.
And then we have a set decor person.
Yes.
And sometimes they work fairly separately.
Yes.
In this case...
or they work.
Aiden was really the overall design person.
Yes.
And he's had a hand in all of those aspects.
Yeah. I think we often make the mistake of decorating without a design plan.
Mm. Because in design, you're creating the space,
yes.
Right? You're actually
designing. What is the purpose of the space?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then decor comes.
What are the limits of the space? What are the,
After the details of the space design are set and revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can.
And, you know, whether it's
what curtains
how
are
we
best,
design a park or how we design a city or how we design a home or how we design a business, right?
Mm-hmm.
People right away jump to decorating.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe that's the fun, colorful part, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's the fun. It's a great part, but it's sort of executing a design.
Yeah.
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 Design is not my gift, but I have huge admiration for people who can do that and do that well.
Yeah.
Well, it's prior proper planning.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, it's like a lot of things in the art sector, people say, oh, I don't have a talent for that. But really, it's a practice. If you learn the skills that you need to learn and then practice them over a great period of time, you become good at design.
For sure. What are the, what are the limits to this and what outcome do we seek? How do we make it all fit?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there's always the grand plan. There's always something bigger, lots of big picture stuff that if you're not careful and you lose sight of that, you get very focused on the details and then you kind of miss the opportunity to connect with this audience, mm-hmm. right? Your wider audience.
So, yeah, if you jump to tactics mm-hmm. too soon. Yeah.
Oh, it's a big, it's a deep subject. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's why we have a whole show about it. Because it just affects all these parts of our lives, yeah. mm-hmm. and we enjoy kind of delving into that. But
I'm fascinated by city design.
Yes.
By how the ideas that are coming out about how to make cities more livable, how yes. to create communities within cities, all that kind of mm-hmm. thing, which I think is not just about aesthetics.
No.
It's hugely about how to be human, mm-hmm. how to live with one another in these crowded places.
Right.
It transforms lives.
Absolutely. How do you achieve the outcome that you seek? Mm-hmm. If you don't think about what outcome you seek, we want to live in the healthiest community. We want to live in the wealthiest community. We want to live in the happiest community, and so that goalpost sort of informs all of the other things.
Yeah.
It's like a play.
I know. Well, I was just thinking of
theater
is like a microcosm of what we're talking about, yeah. right?
Here you're are the cast members.
On a tiny little scale.
Yeah.
You can kind of practice. You can practice making a city.
Exactly.
Because it is a city is like a play.
Mind blown.
Right? Because we have cast members. We have set decorators. We have designers. We have decorators.
We have producers.
Yeah.
We have sound and lighting and... Yeah, there's all these people that have to create this situation, create a living space.
And it all has to work together.
Yes.
All has to work together as one unity. Mm-hmm. That's the
And it has to make everybody feel comfortable and content and natural to be able to work together within that space and not feel artificial or forced or that they want to isolate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Authenticity.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have drama.
That's right.
Boy, do we have drama.
So we're creating an imaginary world in the play, and then we ask our actors to behave authentically within that imaginary world.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah.
The deepy.
Oh, that's getting serious. So before we kind of wrap up talking about this production and going on to some other incredible theater events and activities, maybe just give us some details about actually seeing this play.
Ah, yes. We would love to have an audience.
That's really awesome when an audience shows up to see your artificial world that has real people in it.
We really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, we open a week from this Friday, which is the 22nd of February. And as usual, we run Friday, Saturday, Sunday afternoon, and then the following Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we end up with a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And the Thursdays, again, are pay what you can, cash at the door. Mm-hmm. The other nights are reserved seating. And you can buy those at Entwined Fiber Arts on Hudson. They've moved in the last 6 months or so, just down the street. Used to be across from the art gallery. Now they're next to the candy vault.
No, we miss candy them terribly up at our end of the street.
So you can buy your tickets there, or you can just buy them online through our website, which is shoeswaptheater.com. That's got all the details and the dates and prices and everything else.
That's great. Yeah, and it's nice you can pick your seats. Pick your comfy seats.
Yes, our new comfy bottom seats.
Yeah, what a mammoth project that was.
It really was. It was a nail biter.
Yeah, I know, right? Down to the wire. I remember talking to your lovely wife, Susan, about it right in the final moments, basically, before you even knew that they were coming across the border. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was something. But people love them. People love them. And the main thing is, it's like other things in theater, that if everything's working well, you don't actually notice it.
Yeah.
If the sound cues are bang on, nobody thinks, oh, there's a sound cue. they think, oh, the phone rings, or, you know, an explosion, or, like, that's what they hear. So they don't draw attention to themselves. Well, the seats, ideally, shouldn't draw attention to themselves. You should just sit in them and be so comfortable that you can just pay attention to what's going on stage. And that's, I think, what's happening.
Yeah.
If you're a little bit crooked on your seat, yeah. you know.
Or sliding out the front. Yeah, that was what I was finding.
Or
was
it's like, too tight and you're, you know, fighting for the armrest with the person next to you.
We're human. We have like a proximic kind of thing.
That's right.
It's like, that's too close.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're very pleased with how it's, and how it looks, too.
Yeah.
And the sight
how many
lines
seats?
Are better. 149. We lost... Mm-hmm. Five seats, okay. I guess, going with these, which are a little bigger than some of our old seats. Yeah. So,
but there's something to be said for the small venue, I think.
We love the intimacy of that theater.
Yes.
The fact that there's no bad seats.
That's true.
Yeah, there's no nosebleed seats.
And it's actually, there's... You know, a lot of cities are focusing on creating multiple small venues rather than large venues mm-hmm. because of that, because mm-hmm. there's just opportunity, more experimentation, more innovation, more, and then, like you said, no bad seats.
Yeah. First time I went to a Broadway show, well, 20 years ago, I was shocked at how small the theaters were. Hmm. There's just a whole bunch of them. Like, I thought it'd be this sort of huge,
like
vast expanse
of seats, kind of thing.
They'd pack us in there, but no, it was so intimate.
Nice.
It's much nicer, I think, to play to a small house, mm-hmm. you know, especially a small packed house compared to a large half-empty house.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Yeah.
There's just a whole different feel to
it. Yeah. I mean, of course, you need a range. It depends on the production, and I hope it's... Seems to be working, 42 years and counting. So
that's right.
Yes,
that's right. Our 42nd season.
Yeah, and the plays are not the only thing. That's the other thing about intimate performance is that you have musical events there too.
Oh, I've been to music events there.
Yeah. And you've got somebody coming with.
Yes, the weekend, the Saturday after trying closes, which will be it'll be on the 16th, not when it closes. We close on the 9th. but on the 16th, Devin Moore will be coming back to Salmon Arm for the third time.
Hmm.
She performed the Berlin Waltz at Theater on the Edge back in 2016, I think it was. Yes. And it blew me away.
Is that
I
right?
Love that show.
Lovely.
It's probably my favorite of all the ones we've had at Theater on the Edge. Hmm. A wonderful musical. She has a looper and she does really unusual things with odd little instruments and voice. But really, she's telling the story of her own time in living in East Berlin after the wall had gone.
Hmm.
But it was still a very distinctive culture in East Berlin compared to West Berlin. And so she worked in a cafe or something like that. And she got to know people, some of the regular customers, heard their stories. She bicycled the length of the Berlin Wall. Mm. And so she puts all this together with a marvelous storytelling sense. She's a wonderful storyteller. And it's very human. It's very touching. And very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an opportunity to bring her back last summer, just after the Edmonton Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually met her at the Edmonton Fringe. And then she came and she loved Salmon Arm so much that she wanted to come back. So she came back with her new play called Flute Loops.
Ha! Right, I remember that last year.
And it was a sellout.
Yeah.
We only had about a week to promote it, and it was a sellout. So get your tickets early for this one.
So she's got a fan following here.
Yeah, and she's gotten accolades across the country at the different fringe festivals. So one night only, the 16th, $14 I think the tickets are. Unlike last time, we do have them available ahead of time. It was just at the door because we only had a week to to deal with it. So, I would not miss it and get them early because we might well
So also at Entwined Fiber Arts?
Yes, okay. Entwined has them as well.
That's wow. March 16th.
As well as online, yeah.
March 16th. Oh my gosh, the spring is starting to fill up with stuff.
Yeah, and ozone's coming back. I was excited to hear that.
Ozone, yes. That's the Okanagan Zone of the Theatre BC, which is the umbrella organization for all the community theatre groups in BC. So...
Watch out, theater peeps running around the streets.
It's unusual. We hosted Ozone 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and normally we don't do it that often. Mm-hmm. It's a big undertaking.
Yeah, Canada 150.
But they were desperate for somebody to be willing to host it this year. So
why is that? Like, what is the drawbacks to hosting it?
Because we're awesome, and maybe other communities don't have the capacity.
Well, there's some truth to that. Mm-hmm. One thing I strongly believe is that Salmon Arm knows how to do hospitality.
Yeah.
And that's true across the board, recreational, sports, gatherings, the Lopet, like all of those things. Salmon Arm just does hospitality really well. Mm-hmm. So, and I think Shoe Swap Theater does hospitality really well. We're organized. We've got good people. We know how to do this. So,
trained professionals.
So 2 years ago, again, it was, and we get bigger audiences at the Ozone performances often than the bigger centers do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And that says something about our audiences.
Yeah. Well, what a treat. I mean, it's actually from one of the things that we try so hard to do is bring outside things into Salmon Arm. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, but... It's just so exciting when our local people actually respond and eat it up.
Absolutely.
And people want to come back. So it's all the way from Revelstoke to Osoyoos?
Revelstoke isn't in our zone.
Not Revelstoke.
Used to be. I'm not quite sure why it isn't anymore. But basically, we go from the south. Oliver would be the most southern. Princeton. And then right up the Okanagan to Salmon Arm and... Sometimes, and I'm not sure whether Kamloops is entering this year or not, but sometimes they will enter. So it'll be either 7 or 8 performances from all the different theater groups.
The cast and the crew.
Yep.
So that's a whole different undertaking as well, because they're bringing their sets and props and costumes.
And they have basically 4 hours to set up.
Yeah. And it's
a real
juried
challenge.
Show. Like,
yes,
it a juried
we have an adjudicator.
Adjudicator.
Same adjudicator as last time, actually, Jimmy Tate.
Oh, yeah.
Who everybody loved.
Yeah, yeah.
And so at the end of each show, he gets up on stage and gives a, I don't know, 5 or 10 minute public adjudication comments about the show. And then the next morning, people gather at the theater, and if you bought a ticket to the play, you can come to the coffee critique the next morning.
Nice.
And he makes more detailed comments, but he also gets input, and sometimes we'll work directly with the actors to, you know, it's always how can we squeeze just a little more juice out of this
mm-hmm.
play, right?
Yeah.
No matter how good it is, he'll help to, you know, take it to another level.
I love watching adjudication. I mean, I think it's probably terribly stressful for the people being adjudicated, but as an audience member, it's so exciting to say, yeah, that was really great. And then that adjudicator will say, how about this? Oh, yeah, that's even better.
Yeah.
Like, it's really quite amazing to watch.
It is. You see performances just transformed on the spot with sometimes a very simple. I remember an adjudicator... some years ago in a play that I was in called Enemy of the People. And Steve Heal, whom anybody who's been around for a while will remember as one of our finest directors and finest actors, he played the leading kind of the villain role in a way in this play. And fine actor that he was, he had a hard time getting his hands quite around that character the way he liked to have. The adjudicator had him... do a little scene and focus all of his hostile energy through his eyes. He just imagined all of that coming out of his eyes, and it just transformed.
Wow.
And when that happens, of course, the actor loves it. It's like, oh! And the audience loves it. Like it's, and so, and as a director, I learn more from from the festivals and the adjudication. I have no formal dramatic training. I've learned it all along the way, mostly from Shuswap Theater, but an awful lot of it has come from attending the festival. So it's a great, great learning experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've done, no doubt, your 10,000 hours, so you're an expert now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, probably have. Yeah.
And hasn't there been, like, I'm sorry, maybe I'm wrong, some directorial training happening? Like, I thought there was somebody brought in to do a director's workshop or something in the past few years.
Well, Liz Hobbs from Edmonton, we brought in to direct Mary Poppins.
You did Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I did.
Remember? Or we blocked it out.
And she did a directing workshop.
Oh, okay.
As well, over a number of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And
so did you have many participants in that?
We did. It's interesting and a bit puzzling in that people go to those things and they don't always, like not very many of them actually then step forward to direct a play.
Because it's a big job.
It's
huge.
A big job.
Well, it's sort of careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Our standards are high, so that may be a little bit intimidating, but...
But maybe that's a theater on the edge thing too, right? People can potentially direct smaller works.
And that's right. Yeah. It is an opportunity.
Yeah.
And,
And will Theater on the Edge be happening? Just running out of time here, but...
It will. Shall we save that for after the break?
Yeah, sure, we will. Yeah, because now it's time to take another break.
It's a four-season operation.
Yeah. Well, it just never ends. I know. I know what it's like.
And now... As the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
And we still laugh at that.
We do.
We do.
Because we know there's drama.
Yes.
We even have proof right here in our studio.
Right. So at any theatrical production, there's generally a red carpet. Do you ever have a red carpet?
I think
I've seen red carpet.
Well, we might have had one on stage.
Oh. But there used to be.
There was like milling and around and having a sip of something lovely before.
Well, opening night gala.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Come to opening night on the 22nd, and afterwards there's finger food. The theme this year is going to be Washington cocktail party.
Oh, lovely.
So yeah, just stay afterwards and
excellent.
Nice.
Hang out, meet the cast.
Meet the cast. Cool.
Yeah.
Be starstruck. And and so recently, I think Sunday night was the Grammy Awards. And of course, it's all about the red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's almost more about the red carpet than...
That's what always makes the news, it seems.
Right?
Red carpet moments.
Exactly. And so it was so refreshing and quite dramatic to see a young group of spirit drummers do a Cree round dance on the red carpet.
That's awesome.
And the group is based out of... The drummers are based out of, I believe it's Frog Lake, Alberta.
Hmm.
And there are 16 singers from Western Canada, Arizona, and California, young men who want to tell their story. And when they were asked if they'd like to be interviewed, like, who are you wearing? And, you know, what are you here for? And do you hope you're going to win? They're like, we're not going to talk. We're going to drum. And so they did. And it was an internet sensation.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeah, it's pretty
not always
clip.
What you say. It's how you say it.
That's right.
Yeah. And they were nominated for... the 2019 Indigenous Music Album Juno as well. So
nice.
Yeah, I think I'm reading that right. So.
Yeah. Well, if you ever listen to Rosanna Deerchild on CBC, like the wealth of Indigenous talent in the music industry is just unbelievable.
Fantastic.
We are seeing this fantastic renaissance of Indigenous music. It's very pleasing and it's amazing and uplifting to kind of hear about all these stories.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And we know that all community conversations need to start with reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
End of.
It's time to remake Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have to be ready and we have to, in a way, we have to kind of give up a little bit of what we're, you know, like what we usually imagine for our future, right? We usually kind of expect, as I move forward through life, there will be more wealth and more stability and more this and more that. Well, guess what? we have to change everything we do and how we do it in these next 10 years. And it feels a little bit scary for people, but we are remaking Canada.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We are setting the stage anew.
Nice segue.
There you go. There's my pun for the day.
And I also like to say the word segue.
segue
in every show.
So we've segued and we've punned.
Yes.
Yes.
I used to have a segue, but it broke.
Lovely.
So we've segued back to theater.
Yeah.
Because we set the stage.
So you have a winter production and a spring production and now Ozone. And then in the summer you have the Theater on the Edge. Mm-hmm. It's really I don't know if people know how much of a going concern it is.
Well, if you've heard, Fringe Festival has been going in Edmonton for years, and lots of cities have Fringe Festivals, but that's a trademarked word. Mm-hmm. But really, I think that the success of them is because you're able to experiment and do some crazy things that you may not be able to, produce on a main stage, in a main stage situation, just simply because, you kind of think about the standards, comedy and drama and stuff like that.
Controversy. Well, where's your...
Yeah, so where's your chance to be kind of like, edgy?
Edgy.
And deal with some issues that maybe are not very comfortable for people to talk about. So
test it out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And this is the chance. This is a perfect chance.
Yeah. Theater on the Edge. I think I came up with that, the idea to call it that, because fringe edge, right? It's on the fringe. It's
you
on
used
the edge.
A G. That's good.
And we couldn't use the word fringe because you have to be a member of that organization and follow their rules, and it's too expensive for a little tiny festival like ours. So we think of ourselves as a fringe-like festival.
Fringe-like.
but much smaller, and that's okay. We just have the one venue, and we accept 7 plays or 7 performances. They're not always plays. And a new one goes on every 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So and they have to be under an hour. So you've got an hour to strike the old set, bring in the new one, and like get set up for the next one.
You should put that on one of those GoPros and live feed.
Oh, you mean like do a time lapse?
A time lapse. Cool. Wow.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Huh.
But that's the part of the fun challenge. And also, the short play is better for people that are experimenting, too, because to fill a 2-act, 90-minute, time frame is also very challenging. That's a big play, like a 100-page script.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a chance to try something out, like a short story.
And the price is low so that, if one of the plays doesn't turn your crank, you don't feel like you paid a lot of money to see something you didn't like.
Like entry-level stuff.
But we've had
and it's an event, right? Like you've got the little patio beer and pizza sort of situation going on, and so you can meet up with your friends
the
and
edge
hang
club
out.
We call it
the edge club
instead of the fringe club, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
and so it's free music, free entertainment. There's tents, there's like shelter from the sun, and there's food available, and the bar is open. Yes. And so the whole ambiance, you can make a whole day of just coming to the Fringe and just hang out.
And once upon a time, Edinburgh was a one-venue festival. And look at it now.
Hmm. Was it really?
It would have had to have been. Everything has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You don't wake up one morning and go, I know, we're going to take over the whole city and put in all this cultural programming, and people are going to come from all over the world. I mean, they had to get there.
Yeah.
Well, I think Edinburgh, I happened to be at the Edinburgh Fringe one of the early years, just by accident. I didn't even know about it. We just happened to be there, and so we took in, something ridiculous, 14 plays in 3 days or something.
Oh, wow.
But originally, the Edinburgh Festival was the main stage festival.
Yes.
They had big venues, big events, the tattoo at the castle and so on, and they still have that. And then somebody had this bright idea of having other little performances going around on the fringe of the main festival, which I think is where that language came from.
On the fringe. I get it now.
And
I always thought it was because, edge of society's tolerances. That's what I thought fringe
like you're
meant.
Fringe members.
Well, it probably had more than one meaning.
It's great. It had a perfect word.
One of the rules to call yourself a fringe festival is that it's completely uncensored.
Hmm.
And I guess if a performance actually goes too far over the edges of good taste and breaks the law, then they're responsible for that. But the festival itself cannot censor.
Hmm.
So we're not quite as far as that.
No,
but sometimes some of our performances will have bad language in them, and so on. And so be prepared for that.
Who's to say in 5 years that it's not?
I know,
at
right?
At the Salmar, it's in the streets. Changing, you know.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Language is always evolving. And we're oh, sorry, you're talking about venues. I'm still talking about language.
Oh.
Because I was just thinking about how the censorship thing, like, that's changed. Censorship looked different 10 years ago than it did 30 years mm-hmm. ago than 50. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of wonder, in 10 years, what is, you know, like, what is bad language even going to be? What is swearing even going to be defined as?
Yeah. Oh, if we sanitize too many of our bad words, then we'll have to find more bad words mm-hmm. to I suppose. Replace them, right?
Well, it's like, well, language is so powerful, but we're finding different words to be offended by, so it's okay. Because, you know, what I think what we're trying to do is say words that define people in a untrue way are the bad words now. Whereas swear words, mm-hmm. like the F-bomb and stuff, are not necessarily, like, yeah. what's wrong with
sort
that?
Sort of racist or sexist terms are
exactly.
more offensive
yeah.
than the swear words.
Yeah. So if we're going to give language all of this power, let's make sure it's the ones that actually cause pain and suffering that we get,
right.
that we restrict and remove or whatever. So, yeah. Sorry, I think about this a lot, language.
So can I squeeze in some dates and things?
Yes,
you absolutely can.
Theater on the Edge. Scott Crocker, by the way, from Caravan Theaters, our new coordinator.
Oh, fantastic.
Really? Scott's super cool.
And
super so, organized.
The
good producer
no,
material.
19th, sorry, is it July? Third weekend in July.
Third weekend in July.
19th to the 21st.
Nice.
Tickets will be available once we know who all the acts are on our website or at Entwined Fiber Arts or at the door. Mm-hmm. Very attractive package pricing to get a package and see several plays, make a day of it. It's
yes.
great.
That's fabulous.
Amazing. And it's a great, like, summer thing to bring your family to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you've got visitors and relatives coming to stay with you in the summer, what a great thing to bring them to.
Yeah.
Air-conditioned entertainment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it just is a real highlight. Right?
Oh,
like,
for sure.
It's just
the only place you can see it.
Yeah, and you can spend every day at the beach, or you can do this.
Mm-hmm. Saucy Fops is coming back.
Oh, really?
They've been at every festival so far, and they're a perennial favorite.
Yeah.
Lovely.
One of the biggest audiences we get for them. Mm. They'll be back this year.
Oh, that's great. So, and like any other smaller communities that have kind of come out of the woodwork for this kind of thing?
Not yet. We're still receiving applications yes. from artists.
So how does that, like...
But Fred Skeleton will be back.
Oh,
I think they've been with us every year as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. From Kelowna.
Do you get a lot of applications? Like, is it kind of one of those things where you get 60 or 80 applications, or is it more
no,
like 15?
No. Some years we've had to beat the bushes a little bit.
Yeah, it's pretty
last
niche.
Year we actually had more applications than slots. Mm. But
kind of goes in waves, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. But we're getting better known. I did a bunch of glad handing at the Edmonton Fringe last year. And
good. Yeah. Well, proof of
we'll
concept
that,
too, right?
What's that?
It's one thing to say we're going to do this thing. Once you've done it a couple of times, they're like, you're legit. This is really
That's right.
a thing.
And everybody I spoke to, they were keen. Like,
there we go.
It may yeah. not work for them, but they mm-hmm. liked the idea of coming to Little mm-hmm. Salmon Arm for a little festival.
Wow, how fantastic the work that your group does and the... Mm.
Thank you.
The, you know, that cultural space and the storytelling and 42 years, that's really mm-hmm. something. Yeah. So, you know, find the romance of theater. We know that a certain Hallmark holiday is coming up, and maybe you're scratching your head about what to get. I would suggest two tickets
yeah.
to the next show.
Two tickets and one
yeah.
chocolate.
Yes.
We also sell gift certificates.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, isn't that interesting? Good to know. Well, that's actually, like, that's really helpful because then people can choose.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it is a nice surprise to say, like, it's almost like a movie.
A date night.
Oh, I got just two tickets to the theater.
The theater.
That's right. Make you feel cultured.
That's
yeah,
right.
That's right. Well, I mean, there's so many opportunities in Salmon Arm to feel cultured. Pretty much anything you do here has some element of culture
mm-hmm.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't go to a sporting event without hearing music. And so, you know, there's always something.
Like
anyway,
a cultured pearl.
That's right.
Right. We are a pearl in the wilderness. This is our...
To mix a metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be unusual, actually, to see that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Grandpa's neighbor's navels. Grandpa's neighbor's navels.
Say that more times.
Grandpa's neighbor's navels. Grandpa's neighbor's... Ah, I got three, okay.
That's pretty
the challenge
good.
Is to say it five times. But.
All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you at the theater. Remember that there's always something coming up around the corner, so keep your eye on shoesuptheater.com and you'll get all the info. Thank you, Kim.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
It's been a wonderful day.
Break a leg.
Yeah. Nice. All right. See you next time. Bye.